Getting the Buzz on Bees. Lots of people love bees, and with good reason. Bees are an integral part of the blueberry industry in Maine, and of course, an important part of any garden's beauty. Bees make honey, and amateur beekeeping is a rapidly growing hobby. Yet bees face a number of threats, including colony collapse disorder, which is threatening much of U.S. agriculture. Today on Maine Calling, we talk bees with two experts. With me in our Bangor studio, Frank Drummond, professor of insect ecology at the University of Maine, and Peter Cowan, who is known as the Bee Whisperer. Of course, we'd like to hear from you. Do you keep bees? Are you thinking about building some hives? Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet @MaineCalling, post to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Talking Maine honeybees, all 257 species of them. This is Maine Calling.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by the Clean Bedroom Organic Mattress Showroom in Kittery, Maine, helping you create eco-friendly sleep environments, also at Furnitura Portland and online at thecleanbedroom.com. And by the Maine Community Foundation, working with donors and other partners to strengthen Maine's economy and communities, on the web at mainecf.org.
And Peter Cowan and Frank Drummond, thank you so much for being here on Maine Calling for a great topic. I'll start with you, Frank. How important are bees to the ecology ecosystem?
Well, I would say, in a nutshell, just incredibly important. Bees form really the basis for reproduction of many of our flowering plants, both native but also the plants that we raise for food. And as you mentioned in the very beginning, there are actually 257 species of native bees in Maine. Many of them are solitary, unlike the honeybee, which is a social bee and actually hails from the Mediterranean area of Europe and Western Asia. But maybe to put it more simply in perspective, without pollination and bees, when we sit down for breakfast or lunch or dinner, it would mean that most of our fruits and nuts would not be available to us. So we'd have a fairly bland diet. And even really some of our meats that require clover pastures, those need to be pollinated by bees.
So the 257 varieties of bees, only one of those is the honeybee?
Well, 257 bee species that I'm talking about actually have evolved in North America and Maine, whereas the honeybee is a non-native species, but it's been here since 1624. And so for all intents and purposes, whether you want to call it exotic or native, it's a longtime resident also of Maine.
Now, I want to bring Peter Cowan, you into this conversation. I know this is a busy time of year from you because this is swarming season. What does that mean, swarming season?
Well, swarming is when the honeybee colony reproduces. And because the hive is doing very well and the population is growing and the queen is running out of space to lay eggs, the hive is filling up with honey or it's filling up with bees. And so the colony raises extra queen bees. And while the queen bees are developing, before they hatch, the reigning queen and about half the workforce will leave the colony to find a new home and set up a second colony.
Now, someone will call you when bees are swarming. If people don't know what's going on, this can be frightening, can't it?
A swarm can be a pretty intimidating sight. But in fact, the swarming honeybees are actually very gentle because they don't have a colony to defend. And so what's generally happening is the bees are very preoccupied with relocating and finding a new home. They're also totally full of honey. Before they leave the hive, they take up as much honey as they can because they're going to be a while before they feed again. And that tends to make them relatively quiet as well. So usually swarming honeybees are actually very good-natured.
How would somebody know if they're seeing a swarm of honeybees, honeybees that are swarming?
You generally hear a swarm before you see a swarm. 20, 30,000 honeybees on the wing can make quite a roar. And then you will see this cloud of bees flying in. It seems to be in circles, but gradually this cloud of bees is making progress to some location. Generally, people see the swarm when it lands on a branch of a tree and will wait there, and they'll sort of camp out for maybe an hour, maybe a couple of days, while scout bees go out to look for a new location to actually build the new hive.
Mm. Frank, we've all seen on the highway the trucks full of bees headed down east on their way to fertilize the blueberry barrens. It's fascinating that bees are brought into Maine for a certain season and then taken somewhere else, correct, to help pollinate another crop in another state. Characterize the size of this operation. How many trucks, how many bees are coming in and out of the state every year?
Well, to put it in perspective, there are roughly about 2.6 million commercial colonies of honeybees in the United States. And about 1.4 million are trucked into California every March or so for pollinating almonds. And then Maine is actually the second largest needy state of honeybees, and about 70,000, which certainly doesn't compare to 1.4 million, but 70,000 colonies of honeybees are brought into Maine primarily for pollinating blueberry every May.
Wow. So when we see one of those trucks, how many colonies are going to be on a truck?
On some of the big tractor-trailer trucks, there are usually about 400 colonies on a truck.
So there are thousands of trucks coming into Maine every year full of bees to pollinate our blueberries.
Indeed, they are. And right now, and then sort of this past weekend and right now, many of the trucks now are picking up the bees and going on to their next stop, which might be to New York or North Dakota to make honey, or it could be to areas for cranberry pollination. So these migratory beekeepers are on the move all the time throughout the United States.
It's just fascinating. I know both of you deal with amateurs sometimes. Peter, you mentioned to me that you teach classes. I understand that amateur beekeeping is on the rise. Do we have any sense of how many people are out there who have a hive or two hives or a dozen hives, just doing it for their own enjoyment and their own honey?
Well, there's, I think, just under 1,000 registered in Maine alone, and there's probably considerably more that aren't registered. Certainly, there's a lot of interest in people starting to keep bees, and just this winter alone, I gave classes to 40 students who are looking to take up beekeeping for the first time. In fact, the interest was so great that we've started up a new beekeeping association in the Bangor area called Penobscot County Beekeepers Association. And the numbers of colony beekeepers in the state has been growing steadily since the drop in the number due to problems that the bees had, like mite, which was very discouraging for new beekeepers. There's been a lot of interest in trying to help honeybees, and so a lot of people have sort of taken it up and starting to keep bees again.
All right. Well, if you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number is 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You could email us at talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I want to ask each of you, what should someone who's been thinking about keeping bees, maybe thinking about it for years, know? What are some of the considerations? Do you need to have a certain amount of land? Do you need to have access to certain kinds of plants? What do you advise?
Peter, why don't you go first, and then I might follow up.
You can keep bees in a variety of areas. You don't even necessarily need a yard. You could be keeping bees on your garage roof. As long as you're not putting your bees right in the neighbors on their fence or anything like that, basically the bees are very unobtrusive. And so there is inner city beekeeping, and there's middle of the country beekeeping. And all of the bees are very adaptable to all those different environments. And actually, some of these inner city areas can produce a lot of honey because there's such a variety of plants in people's yards. And so keeping bees, the first thing to do would be to look at, contact a the local beekeeping club. You can go online to mainbeekeepers.org and find out where a local chapter of the beekeeping association may be near you. And there's a lot of books and a lot of beekeeping supply companies in the state. And many places are giving lessons in starting for, beekeeping for beginners like myself.
Frank?
I was going to say another thing, sort of a little twist on maybe you could call it stewardship of bees, is that for those that maybe don't want to necessarily actually rear honeybees, is that you can be involved in many ways. For instance, planting of alternative flowers for bees can be a really rewarding thing to do in your garden. And then watching their behavior. There's nothing more fun to watch honeybees tumbling in the flower of a poppy, almost as if they're just enjoying themselves rolling in the pollen. And then also there are some other bees that, people can actually enhance and observe. So, for instance, we have about 18 species of these bees called Osmia leaf-cutting bees. And by taking wood blocks and drilling holes in the blocks, you can provide nesting sites and have them actually move into these blocks, and then you can watch them in your garden, and it can be quite rewarding as well.
You mentioned poppies. What are some other flowers that someone who might want to attract bees might plant?
Oh, well, there's many. And really what you want to do is think all season long. So you want to think about really early spring flowers, many of the shrubs, for instance, like willows and maples are very important sources. And then as you move on to some of the fruit trees, such as cherries. But then in midsummer is generally when Maine has a shortage of nectar and pollen plants. And so plants such as borage are very popular with bees. And then also sunflowers. And then later on toward the end of the summer, very important are the asters, goldenrods, meadowsweet. So one wants to think sort of how you can provide continuous food all the way through the season.
Go ahead, Peter.
Right. And one of the biggest single things that you can do to help honeybees in terms of the plants is to try to avoid putting herbicides down on your lawn. Things like dandelions and clover provide some of the biggest sources of nectar and pollen for the bees during key times of the year. And it breaks my heart to see these monoculture lawns, which are beautiful green lawns, but no dandelions in the spring and no clover in the summer, and it can be make a huge impact for the local bees.
Mm, I have a feeling that a lot of people are going to push back on not letting letting there be dandelions in their lawn here in Maine.
But I was going to say, in fact, the dandelion was not accidentally brought into the U.S., and it was not brought in for dandelion wine. It was actually brought in the 1600s because in New England, we have a real dearth of nectar flow sort of in early May. And they were brought over by the Europeans specifically to help honeybees because honeybees were so important in providing sweetener, wax for candles, and other products. And so they were really brought here for the bees. And we should keep this in mind.
Isn't that interesting? So before, as I'm weeding my vegetable garden, cursing the dandelions, I need to change my attitude. Is
exactly.
that what you're saying?
Exactly.
I'm going to ask you all the question I'm sure everybody asks. What is the risk if you decide to keep bees of getting stung? Peter?
If you keep bees, you will probably get stung. But you'll find that typically you can avoid most of the stings with wearing a full bee suit with a veil and gloves. The way that bees generally will sting you is once your gloves get a bit worn, they can actually sting through the gloves. But actually a bee sting through a glove is a fraction of a normal bee sting. And it's not like grabbing a bee and letting it sting you fully. You can get the stinger off very, very quickly. And in fact, it doesn't bother you. It's not much. Doesn't feel much more than a very quick sting, and then the the pain dissipates very quickly when it's going through the clothing.
Okay. And Frank, if you encounter bees in your garden or just being out and about, what should one do?
Well, I think if you encounter them, one of the nicest things to do is watch them and be very still and observe what they're doing. For the most part, honeybees are really very unlikely to be defensive and sting you if you're not very close to their hive and actually threatening the colony that's in the hive. Although it can happen that you can be stung. Bees, honeybees tend to be more aggressive to dark colors, to wool. And so in the summer, if you're wearing light colors and cottons, you're less likely to be threatened by them. And what can happen is incidental stinging. They can get caught in your hair, especially if you have curly or frizzy hair. They can get stuck. And if that happens, my advice is just to calmly reach up there, grab the bee, and give it a gentle squeeze, and you will kill the bee and you can pull it out. Because if you try and swat it or start running, if they're caught in your hair, they'll sting you.
Okay. On that note, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
We got 12 bottles of water, 56 beers, 2 vodkas, 4 whiskey, 6 bottles of wine, tequila, Nutella, cheese, steaks, a Milky Way.
That's Seth Rogen in This Is the End, a parody of end-of-the-world movies. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Rogen and Evan Goldberg, who co-wrote and co-directed the film and co-wrote Superbad. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. MPBN's Maine Capital Connection television channel offers daily coverage of the legislature in Augusta. Our coverage starts at 10 each weekday morning and includes coverage of House and Senate sessions, select committee hearings, and occasional interviews and press conferences. We also provide a rebroadcast of the day's coverage in the evening, usually at 7 o'clock. The Maine Capital Connection channel is available over the air and on most cable companies' digital tier. For more information, visit mpbn.net or call Audience Services at 800-884-1717. Again, 800-884-1717. Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by the Maine law firm of Eaton Peabody. Statewide practice, local service, with offices in Augusta, Bangor, Brunswick, Ellsworth, and Portland. And by the Maine Community Foundation, working with donors and other partners to strengthen Maine's economy and communities, on the web at mainecf.org.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Bees and Honey. With me in our Bangor studio, Frank Drummond, professor of insect ecology at University of Maine, and Peter Cowan, who is known as the Bee Whisperer. We would like you to join our conversation. Are you a beekeeper? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We're going to take a call now. This is Meg in Hollis Center. Meg, go ahead. Meg, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, you there?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, hi. I just had a quick question. Are there companies or organizations that will I've heard of people who will sort of temporarily put their hives on individuals' land or near their gardens, or if they have a garden center or a vegetable business. Are there people in the state of Maine who will do that, and do they charge a fee for that?
Peter, you know the answer to that?
I'd say that the answer is yes. I mean, I do it myself. I'm just a hobbyist beekeeper, but I keep rent out a couple of my hives for blueberry pollinations for small one-acre lots. I've got a few different people that take colonies from me in the spring. And I know a lot of other beekeepers do that privately, and you can get them. Typically, yes, there is a charge, and it varies. The charge usually depends on how long the colony's there and the access to it and how many colonies you need.
Could someone find out about those by going to mainebeekeepers.org?
typically by making direct contact with the beekeepers, but you could certainly post questions there or post questions on my Facebook page, and I will try and get some answers to you. My Facebook page is The Bee Whisperer, and I will try and get some answers for you if that's of any help.
Okay, great, Peter, and thank you, Meg, for your question. We have a Facebook question from Donald. He asks, I've had a couple hives in the past and planning to get next season. What are the advantages of a top bar hive versus traditional stacks with supers?
Well, there are advantages and disadvantages. So the more typical stacks, boxes that are referred to, are called the Langstroth hive. And the advantage of having the Langstroth hive is that they have been researched and modified, and there's a lot known about managing bees in these hives since they've been around for over 150 years. The top bar hive was actually developed in Africa, and it has been very popular in the last few years in the United States. One thing people like them is that they're quite ornamental. Quite often, many of them have glass panels in them, so you can watch the bees. As far as the advantages, there are some opinions, but there's really no factual data about it, that bees do better in top bar hives because one of the major pests of bees, the varroa mite, which is a parasitic bee, it's thought that maybe they can't reproduce and survive as well in a top bar hive because the cells are smaller. But in fact, that really hasn't been shown to be the case. I would say that the top bar hives are a fun thing to embark on. We have both at the University of Maine, but really, if you're a beginning beekeeper, I might suggest using the Langstroth hive just because there are so many other beekeepers out there that have experience with them and you can get help starting your bees in them.
If someone's up in the Orono area, can they come to the University of Maine and see the kinds of hives that you have? And
they could. They could. I don't really have sort of a display apiary, but if they contacted me and came by, I'm always willing to take people through and look at some bees.
Okay, yes. Not to put you on the spot, Frank, but you mentioned you had both. I want to ask you, you mentioned mites, and at the beginning of the show we mentioned the colony collapse disorder. This has made national news. I know it's a very serious problem in parts of the country. How has that affected us here in Maine? Are we seeing the kind of die-off of our bees that other parts of the nation are seeing?
Well, it's a difficult question to answer briefly, but let me just start by saying we're actually plagued by many types of losses, and colony collapse disorder is a very specific one that was first seen in 2006. And at the same time, overwintering losses of honeybee colonies escalated from an average of 10 to 15% to 30, 40, 50%. And so losses in general have increased, and they're due to many, many different causes. Colony collapse disorder was a special phenomena where the colonies collapse, and the symptoms are that you might have a strong colony of 70,000 bees, and the numbers of workers dwindle rapidly over a week or two to a point where you just have a queen and just a handful of workers left, and all the larvae that need to be fed by the workers perish. And then the other aspect of the symptom is that then if you try to put new bees into the old equipment that's experienced colony collapse disorder, quite often the bees reject it and are repelled by the wax comb and the equipment. It's been very difficult to pin down colony collapse disorder, maybe because it was defined so specifically. Mm. But currently, people feel that the major causes of colony losses in Europe and the U.S. are the parasitic mite, which is referred to as varroa mite, varroa destructor, and also about 18 different viruses, which many of these viruses are vectored by this mite. And this parasitic mite also compromises the immune system of honeybees. Mm. And then there's a fungal pathogen, a microsporidian pathogen called Nosema serrani, which in the early 90s jumped from Asian honeybees to our European honeybee and also apparently compromises the immune system.
So all sorts of threats. How is Maine's population compared to the rest of the nation? Are we about the same as what you're reading about other places?
I think that in general, it's been found that bees in the cooler, more temperate areas of the United States tend to experience less colony collapse during the summer, but that colony losses are greater in the winter because of the harsher conditions and the bees are confined. But really, those bees that experience most of the losses tend to be these migratory colonies that are moved all over the United States, and that's a stressful aspect for the bees themselves, as being confined on a truck for 5 or 6 days.
Let's go to a few more calls. This is Becky in Penobscot. Becky, go ahead.
Hi. I'm on Penobscot Bay at the moment. I'm on the ferry. I just wanted to mention that dandelions have other uses, and they're so wonderful to watch the bees on them. I just want, it's so sad to see people using herbicides on them. They have long tap roots that bring up a lot of nutrients for the garden, and they are delicious. I've often added them into our sauerkraut, and they are just great for your body, as well as they really add a wonderful flavor. So just recommending that you get a new love for dandelions instead of applying that herbicide.
Oh, thanks for your call, Becky. I don't apply herbicide to them. I just pull them up. But I will try to eat them more often. Thank you so much. We'll go now to Chris in Thomaston. Chris, go ahead.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Great.
Great show. I have a quick question for you. I have a young daughter, and she is a toddler right now, and I want to teach her about all things nature-related as she gets older. And my concern is what types of bees might appear to be, you know, bad versus the ones I really need to stay away from or not go near. So, you know, in particular, what comes to mind is when you're out in the woods sometimes, you'll see those like paper cone-shaped bees' nests that are way up high in the trees. And I always wondered about those things, if they were dangerous or not. I know that the yellow jackets that live in the ground and in logs, those are pretty aggressive. But I was just wondering if, you know, what types of bees that I really need to be aware of with my child out in the woods.
Okay, thanks, Chris. I'm going to have them answer your call off. I'm going to drop your call because there's some noise coming in. But who would like to respond to Chris's question about which bees are more dangerous?
I'll respond first, and then if Peter has something, he can follow up. But basically what I'll say is that the hornets, yellow jackets, these wasps are actually not bees, although they're close cousins. But unlike being vegetarians like bees, the yellow jackets are actually carnivorous. And the caller's right that they are very aggressive. And so these what are referred to as vespid wasps that make these nice paper nests, if you bump into the nest or even sometimes just come within a foot or two of them to inspect them, can be quite aggressive. And they can sting you. And sometimes it feels like someone has shot you with a BB gun. They hurt quite a bit, the sting, because they're fairly large animals. But again, like many of the bees, that they are defensive when they're really defending their colony, because inside that paper nest they have a colony. And so if you keep your distance, quite often you can still observe them from 10 feet away, and they're quite fascinating. You can watch them bring caterpillars in and sort of watch the guards at the entrance of the nest defend the colony from intruders. So I would just say that with the yellow jackets and the hornets, you should be selectively wary, but I don't think it's something that you need to be frightened of.
Okay. And Peter Cowan, I'm going to put the next question to you. This is from Jigs the Clown via Facebook. He says, I'm a beekeeper in Down East Maine. I get called by blueberry farmers and have captured two swarms in the last 2 days. Could you talk about swarming and let people know about capture and retrieving? You've talked about swarming a little bit, but what about capture and retrieving? That's part of what you do, isn't it?
Yes, I spend a lot of time this time of year capturing swarms. The first thing to do is if you see a swarm, don't panic. But report it. Let people, a beekeeper, know. You can contact. You can go online and get the that mainbeekeepers.org. We've got a swarm team, and basically you fill out a bit of information on that, and they will pass out that information to people who are committed to collect, picking up those swarms. We sort of see it as our sort of a moral obligation of a beekeeper is to basically get out there and make sure swarms aren't being a nuisance for people. And so we spend a lot of time going out there, educate the public, but the beekeeper can pick up that swarm and rehouse it and find it, get it a new location, a safe location, and provide the equipment for it to build its colony in. The problem about leaving a swarm is that the swarms can then alternatively, they may be fine and move on to something like a hollow tree, but more often than not, the swarm might find somebody, the soffit of somebody's roof or the wall of somebody's building, and set up home in there. And that's a much more complicated and, relatively speaking, more dangerous job to remove those. And I do a lot of that as well, removing bees from people's buildings. But the best thing to do is if you see a swarm, let the beekeepers know through the main swarm team as soon as you can. Also, there's a phone number for them, for the swarm hotline, which is 207-619-4233, or go on to mainbeekeepers.org.
Okay, and we'll put that on our Facebook page. We're going to take another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions. Please stay tuned.
Hello, I'm Linda Hunt. Next time on City Arts and Lectures, our guest is social critic Fran Lebowitz. Considered heir to the crown of Dorothy Parker, Lebowitz is known for her unique perspective on issues such as gender, race, the media, and more. Join me next time for a conversation with Fran Lebowitz on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
And you can find that program tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock. Every day you hear messages about local businesses and organizations that provide their financial support to MPBN. They all understand the value of MPBN in our community and have decided to make public radio and television a part of their marketing effort. If you would like to learn what these folks already know, please visit mpbn.net and click on Business Support to find information about the value of sponsorship, answers to frequently asked questions, and contact information. Or call us at 1-800-884-1717 and ask for Susan Tran. As always, thank you for your support of public broadcasting here in Maine. Join us at 1 o'clock immediately following Maine Calling for the Commonwealth Club of California. Today's speaker, Jeremy Scahill, reporter for The Nation and author of Dirty Wars. That's the Commonwealth Club of California coming up at 1 o'clock here on MPBN Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today, we are learning about bees. With me in our Bangor studio, the man known as the Bee Whisperer, Peter Cowan. Also with us, Frank Drummond, professor of insect ecology at the University of Maine. Join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. Email talk at mpbn.net. Post to our Facebook page or tweet at Maine Calling. Before we go to the calls and the emails, though, Frank Drummond is going to teach us the bee ditty.
The little swarming ditty. So
the swarming ditty.
And this probably comes from the 1800s in New England. And swarms are primarily a spring activity. But they do occur later in the summer, but the swarms get smaller and smaller. And so the ditty goes like this. They say, a swarm in May is worth a ton of hay. A swarm in June is worth a silver spoon. A swarm in July ain't worth a fly.
I like that. That's great. Okay, we're going to go to Peter in Starks. Peter, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Good morning. I have I enjoyed beekeeping here in Stocks for many years, but I got into bear trouble. In fact, the last time the bears came by, they took my hive off with them for a lunch. So I am out of the bee business. Do the guys have any thoughts about effective bear prevention?
Well, bears are definitely a natural predator of honeybees because in the spring they need a protein source, especially with their cubs. And early in the spring, a lot of insects really haven't become populous yet. And so honeybees are sitting there, and they're a natural target. And the bears can smell them from a long way away. Electric fencing is one, but that really won't stop a very hungry bee, and that's evidenced on the blueberry barrens all the time. And so many of the blueberry growers have gone to building platforms because actually black bears don't like to climb as much as people believe. And so by putting honeybee colonies 5 to 6 feet up on a platform has been shown to be effective, as well as putting your honeybees in chain-linked sort of fenced compounds with a roof on the top of chain link also works. But other than that, if you're in bear country in the spring, they will find them unless you move your hives out of bear country for the springtime. And then usually once middle to end of June comes, the bears are often foraging on the bountiful foods that are found in Maine, so that they're not as much of a threat.
Peter, do you find this a good part of your work, dealing with bears and bees?
Thank goodness, so far, very little. but the only other thing I might suggest is that if you've got a flat roof, maybe move your hive, put hives up on the flat roof, as long as it's a safe place for you to work.
All right. Well, Peter, thank you for your question. Here we have an email question from Amy. She says, Dr. Drummond, could you please say a bit about the importance of limiting the use of insecticides on home gardens, especially systemic ones that can be transmitted through nectar and pollen, which might have a sub-lethal effect on adults and larvae of not only honeybees, but also native bees? And what I'd like to add to Amy's question is, which insecticides are the worst?
Yeah, very good question by the caller. And bee exposure to insecticides is increasing over the last several decades. And it's a very difficult question in terms of which insecticides are worse, because there are some insecticides, some of the older ones, which are very persistent, extremely toxic to bees. But in the long run, they may actually have less of a negative impact because they kill the foragers right away, so that the foragers tend not to bring insecticide back to the colony. And so it isn't incorporated into the food to feed the young. But in the effort to make insecticides more safe, there have been new classes of insecticides that have been developed, and one quite well-known one now in the news are called the neonicotinoids. They're a nicotine-type poison, and they were developed because they tend to be less toxic to mammals and birds. But to insects, they're incredibly toxic at just molecule levels, and they're also very soluble in water, and the plant can take them up, and they can find their way into the nectar and pollen. So that if you treat your lawn for Japanese beetles with neonicotinoids, many of these nice dandelions may take up that poison, and then when the bees visit it, it isn't enough to kill them, but they take it back, and over time, these insecticides can be accumulated. And some of the sublethal effects that have been found is premature loss of queens. Also, one study that I conducted looked at some of the effects of some other pesticides, and it affects their endocrine glands, their hormone system. And this can affect rearing of the young and also the longevity of the worker bees. So these new insecticides don't always out-and-out kill colonies, but they stress them, and they can result in deleterious effects. And so I would say whenever you're thinking about controlling weeds or insect pests in your garden, think very carefully about trying to limit the application of insecticides, especially to your garden plants and flowering shrubs, because it can have quite a negative impact.
And how about herbicides?
Herbicides, for the most part, have not been found to be directly toxic, but because bees need a continual floral resource through the season, they can have an indirect effect in large-scale agriculture. If we eliminate a lot of the plants that bees normally forage on, that farmers rightly so will call weeds if they're in the field, if we're too good at eliminating those, then we can create periods of time where there are no food resources for the bees.
Okay, another call now. This is Corey in Auburn. Corey, go ahead.
Hi, yes. I was listening and I heard about the beekeeper suit. I was wondering, because I've heard a lot of the times it's better to stay calm around bees, wasps, bumblebees, any of those kinds. Is it necessary when you have a bee farm, is it necessary to wear it? Or if you stay calm while they're flying around you, will they be less likely to attack you?
Peter Cowan.
Generally speaking, yes. The calmer you are, the smoother your movements, the less jumpy you are around the bees, the less they're going to respond in kind. The bee suit, I wear them because I'm with the bees all the time, but a lot of folks work their bees with no protective equipment at all. Generally speaking, if the weather is good and there's a lot of blossoms out there, the bees are busy collecting nectar, they're in a very good mood. But if it's like a thunderstorm just about to arrive, or you're in between blooms of, say, clover and goldenrod, when there's a bit of a gap in nectar production, then bees can be a little bit more aggressive. And so I'd find the protective equipment is very helpful then.
You know, we've talked about the health effects of or the benefits of dandelions. How about a quick plug for honey? What do we know about the health effects of honey?
Well, as far as a very nutritious sweetener, honey has quite an advantage over cane sugar in that, in addition to having several types of sugars in it, plant sugars, pentose and hexose sugars, 5 and 6 carbon sugars, also there are several amino acids. There are lipids in it. And so honey is a very nutritious food, but also because it is so acidic, it also tends to have a lot of antimicrobial activity. And some people even use it as a salve on top of wounds to prevent bacterial infections. But also it means it has very long storage shelf life.
And I know people who have a spoonful a day. So on that note, Dr. Frank Drummond and Peter Cowan, thank you so much for being here on Maine Calling. Frank Drummond is professor of insect ecology at the University of Maine in Orono. Peter Cowan is known as the Bee Whisperer. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. John Keimel ran the board. Volunteer Cindy Hahn answered your calls. We had additional help from Rich Tozier in our Bangor studio and from the MPBN web team. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our podcast by visiting mpbn.net/Maine Calling. Tomorrow on the program, the latest on what's been happening in Augusta. We will hear about budget deals, pending legislation, and the prospects for wrapping up the session before the 4th of July. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.